Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to talk college hockey. This is USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com. USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. Be a part of the conversation. Give us a call now or message us on Twitter at USCHO. This is USCHO Live.
Good evening and welcome to USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker. We'll be joined by Jim Connolly in just a moment. Our guests tonight are Canisius head coach Dave Smith. The Griffins have a first-round playoff bye clinched in Atlantic Hockey. We'll also be joined by sports writer John Powers. He's written for the Boston Globe for over four decades, and he'll be talking to us, I'm sure, in part about last night's Beanpot championship and consolation, and also other things going on around Boston and in Hockey East. Before we get to the program, don't get left out in the cold this spring. Be there as the best of the best will compete for the title of national champion. Experience the NCAA Men's Frozen Four. Regional action drops the puck March 27 through 29 and continues April 9 and 11 at the Frozen Four in Boston. Experience it live as determination will make history. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 to make a date with champions. And, Jim, I'm definitely looking forward to that. I think they're doing that just to whet our appetite for what is one of the great events in college sports. I think the best championship in college sports, that is NCAA Division I hockey.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's not even just the Frozen Four. That whole tournament from day one, and you know, I think a lot of people understand March Madness because you know, on the basketball sense, because it has such a broad national appeal. But some of the games you see in college hockey just really transcend what you can have in basketball. Basketball is really built on buzzer beaters, right? Like that's what thrills us about the March Madness tournament. But when you have overtime and double overtime and triple overtime and quadruple overtime like we had in Albany in 2000 with BC and St. Lawrence, like that's unbelievable. Like you are talking about sitting on the edge of your seat for, you know, upwards of 2 hours, 2.5 hours waiting for that one goal to be scored that sends somebody to play for a national championship. So I think that you know, stuff like that can be thrilling. That's what I love the most about that tournament. And you know, not to mention they're going to bring it to my hometown this year, and a building I love, and I've seen a number of great games in, including some unbelievable championship games, an unbelievable national championship game in 2004 between Maine and Denver. So I look forward to it every year, and this year maybe a little extra special being here in Boston.
Speaking of overtime games, you saw a pair of those yesterday.
Yeah, and I have to admit I actually didn't see any of the consolation game between BC and Harvard. I was told that it was a pretty good game. Maybe didn't have a lot of atmosphere, obviously, with nobody really in the building. And as Alex Faust, one of our writers, pointed out, that the first period really was just parents and girlfriends. There was nobody else in that building. You know, I think they didn't even have the popcorn servers come in for the first game because they knew how empty it would be. But, you know, BC wins a thrilling game that has such impact on the pairwise. Harvard, a team that at Christmas time was number one on the pairwise, is now below the Mendoza line and falling slowly and slowly, quickly, however you want to put it. But they are now down to, I think, 17 in the pairwise. If BU had actually lost that late game, which they won in overtime, Harvard would have fallen to 21 in the pairwise. So that's a team that is really struggling right now. And BC, on the other side, is on the upswing. They now move to 9 in the pairwise with last night's win. So a big consolation game, if that's ever a term that can be used. And then a really thrilling championship game. Two teams, you know, Boston University that has dominated that tournament but hadn't won since 2009, looking to get back to the winner's circle, and Northeastern that hasn't won now in 27 years. And a lot of people have, you know, make a big deal out of 1980 when Northeastern won their first bean pot. But if Northeastern loses next year's bean pot, they will go a longer span from the beginning of the tournament to 1980. That span will be eclipsed from 1988 to next year if they can't win it. It'll be a longer span before they win the tournament. So, you know, it was such a big deal because they had gone 27 years without winning it on the front end. Now they have a chance to go 28 years on the back end without winning it, which is quite remarkable. They, again, fall in heartbreaking fashion in overtime last night, which seems hard to believe. But, you know, that's the part of hockey. They fell behind and then were able to really rally and play a great third period against a BU team that has not really given up much in the third period. I think I wrote in my story they were plus 30 coming into last night's game, or maybe they were even a plus 32, because I think last night's game was factored into that. They were, you know, they had dominated opponents in the third period, yet somehow gave up two goals to get into overtime, and then somehow BU finds a way to win, and poor Northeastern is just that disappointed, ugly stepsister, whatever you want to call it. You know, they are in that role yet again, and this tournament kind of lives up to repeating history as it has really for now almost three decades.
Well, you mentioned pairwise rankings, and I guess characterizing six. Below number 16 as the Mendoza line is probably pretty accurate, although it's not quite as futile a season as a 200 batting average. But you're right, really, actually anybody below 15, given that at this point it's likely that the Atlantic Hockey winner will be below that. So it would be 15 teams above that line. A lot of teams starting to slide down. It was a big boost for BU that finds itself now number 6 in the pairwise. And it looks like the Terriers have probably put themselves in a pretty good position for an at-large bid unless they have a complete collapse.
Yeah, and I think that if you look at maybe 1 through 7, you might even drop down to 8 at this point. I think Nebraska-Omaha is 8. All of those teams would have to have some sort of a massive collapse, and that's losing every regular season game that's left. And in the Big Ten, that could be 3 weeks. In Hockey East, ECAC, Atlantic Hockey, it could be just 1 week. Everybody else, I think, has 2 weekends left. If you'd have to lose every regular season game and then get eliminated immediately in your conference tournament to really melt down. That's how big the collapse has to be. That's what we're talking about right now when you really look at the pairwise. So when you look at the quality of the teams that are up there, Minnesota State, North Dakota, Duluth, Miami, Michigan Tech, Boston University, Denver, Nebraska, Omaha, they are not teams that seem positioned or poised. None of those teams. Nebraska, Omaha hasn't played well. I think they've got 4 straight losses after last weekend. So maybe they're the one team that you can see really heading in the wrong direction. But everybody else at the top 7 right now is playing good hockey and heading in the right direction. So you almost feel safe saying, hey, those 7 teams are probably in the tournament as of today. Everybody else, they're fighting and whatever you want to refer to that line is, that bubble line that is, you know, really at 15. We, you know, on our site we put 16 because it is a 16-team tournament. But the reality is with the Atlantic champion, even if Robert Morris were to win Atlantic Hockey, right now they're 23rd in the pairwise, and everybody else from that league, I think the next highest team is Bentley at 36, unless I'm missing something. No, I think it's Bentley at 36. So one of those teams from Atlantic will take that 16 spot. So 15 is really where you have to set the line right now. And there's so many teams that are on that bubble, and quality teams. You're talking about Minnesota and Quinnipiac and Providence, Yale, UMass Lowell, Vermont, and as I mentioned, that Harvard team that not too long ago, we're just going back a month and a half, 2 months, was at number 1 in the pairwise. There's a lot of teams trying to fight right now for their postseason life, but it does show the volatility that's involved in this pairwise when you have a team that not too long ago was number 1 and now wouldn't even make the tournament if it started today.
Just one team in the top 16 from the Big Ten, and Minnesota moving back up to number 10, 6-1-1 in their last eight games, at least 6-1-1 for NCAA purposes. People were ready to just about write the Gophers off after the Mariucci Classic, but it looks like they put themselves in a pretty good position here down the stretch.
That was a team that was struggling going into the break, and then you come back from the break and they were missing some key players either to injury or World Juniors. Once they got everything back and kind of could gel a little bit more as a team, since they've put all their pieces back together, I think they've played very good hockey. So I think that was a team that really, I think, had the longest stint, consecutive stint at least, at number one in our poll this year. So I don't think I should be surprised. They did drop below that line, and they were a team on the outside looking in just a few weeks ago, but they're playing good hockey. And I think that team just has way too much talent. And we can say that for a lot of teams in the Big Ten. I think you have to put Michigan in there. They have so much talent as well. That those two teams particularly, I think you can also throw Michigan State in there. And maybe even Penn State, the way that they played early in this season. All of those four teams should have the ability to make postseason runs. It's just who, if any of those teams without an automatic qualifier, will get into the national tournament. I think that I feel at the end of the day, you're still going to end up with two teams from the Big Ten, whether it's an automatic qualifier and an at-large bid, or it's one of those at-large bids actually wins your tournament and becomes the automatic qualifier from a top 16 school. But I think that the Big Ten will probably get two teams into the tournament when we get to mid-March. There's just too much quality on those, especially those two rosters at Minnesota and Michigan. You have to feel that those two teams will do what they have to do, win the right amount of games and beat the right amount of opponents. And you're going to be playing some quality opponents within your league down the stretch. Somebody has to get above that line so you get two teams in that conference into the tournament.
One of the teams that also you and Matthew Semisch highlighted today is Quinnipiac. They clinched at least a share for the Cleary Cup in the ECAC regular season. And, it was a question that Matthew asked after Yale and Union winning the last two national championships and Quinnipiac contesting for it 2 years ago. Is it likely that Quinnipiac could make it three in a row for the league? Do the Bobcats stack up with the other teams right at the top?
I think they do. You know, I saw them play way back in the first month of the season. It might have been the second or third week of play in college hockey. So we're talking mid-October. And I wasn't unimpressed by them, but I knew that they were going through some struggles early in the season. I remember the frustration from Rand Pucknold talking to him before the second game. Just didn't feel that his team was, committed to the team defense that they are very good at playing typically, and they didn't seem to have the offense to gel to go along with maybe a defensively weak team. That has improved, and especially on the defensive end, it's improved. But something I mentioned in Tuesday Morning Quarterback, and what impresses me the most about this Quinnipiac team, is if you look at the top four scorers, and I think we mentioned this when we had Rand on a few weeks ago, there's one member from each class. So over the last 4 years, they have recruited a blue-chip player who is having an impact this year. Sam Annis, as a sophomore, leads the team in scoring. Matthew Pekka, he's 3 points behind, 30 points. He's a senior. Travis St. Denis is a junior with 27 points. Landon Smith, a freshman with 27 points. So what that shows to me is that this team is, in their recruiting cycle, every single year is bringing in a player who can have an immediate impact and continues to have an impact. All four of these players have had really solid careers at Quinnipiac. And then you throw in Michael Gartig, the goaltender, who right at this point is 19-6-3 with a 1.94 and a 9.18. Maybe not the most stellar numbers on the goals against and save percentage, but he gets the job done. So I do believe that this team has the ability. You have some guys that played on that team that was the national runner-up just 2 years ago, so you have that experience of being there. But it always comes down to how do your young players play in the postseason. That'll be the biggest test for Quinnipiac, but I do believe that they have the ingredients it takes to become a national champion.
Something else you guys speculated on that I found interesting was the Spencer Penrose Award for Coach of the Year, and obviously it's pretty early on that. The postseason has a huge impact on who will be tabbed with that award. But I really like one of the guys that you guys had bubbled to the top, and that's Mike Hastings at Minnesota State.
Yeah, and I got to meet him in person for the first time last year, and beyond the coaching, his personality is wonderful for the game. He's a kind of a man of the people. I don't know where he's actually from. He probably has Canadian roots, but he almost has a southern charm to him. Very friendly guy, very excited guy to be part of the process, be part of a team that's winning and doing well. And he has had such success since getting to Minnesota State. It's fun to watch his team continuously improve. And I saw them in the NCAA tournament last year, and they lost a really good one-goal game to UMass Lowell and fought the Riverhawks, which I think were arguably a much better team. But they fought them right to the final buzzer. And, you know, I believe there's a face-off play with 4 seconds left that they nearly got a really quality bit off. I mean, that's how good that team was last year. And they have obviously taken a major step forward. They're number two in our poll right now. Number one in the pairwise. This is a team that has been consistent. They have gotten points from every weekend in their league. They have found ways to win games. They just do a lot of things right. I just like what he has done with that program to show. And he was a great assistant. Yeah, I believe he was at Nebraska Omaha for a number of years and had some success under Dean Blaze. He was a great assistant that had to take that head coaching job and did it at Minnesota State, which was maybe not a school with a ton of history for success at the Division I level. They had some nice Division II success, but he was ready to go in and say that, you know, we can play here in a small town and we're going to win. And they've done exactly that. And I think that he really leads my list at this point right now for who should win the Spencer Penrose. And trust me, our conversation created a lot of controversy for the second consecutive week in that column. We don't usually think about writing controversial stuff, but the folks at North Dakota were all over us for not talking about Dave Haxtell. And hey, you know what? I think that North Dakota's had a fantastic season, but I think that people expect that. And a lot of times the National Coach of the Year in the Coach of the Year in every conference even goes to a coach that exceeds expectations. You know, I think people expected Dave Haxtell to have a fantastic season. And if Dave Haxtell wins a national championship, then he probably deserves a Spencer Penrose. But that's the step forward that North Dakota has to make. Whereas Minnesota State, you know, I think that people thought when the WCHA was formed under the new structure that you might as well just write this school off. They'll never have any impact on a national stage. This might be the number one team going into the national tournament. So I think that Mike Hastings, in my mind, deserves more attention than not taking anything away from Dave Haxtell, but probably deserves a little bit more attention for the National Coach of the Year than Haxtell deserves.
I'll throw one maybe counterpoint to that. Not that I'm disagreeing with you, but it kind of made me think about discussions that would happen maybe a decade ago. For example, with Joe Torre with the Yankees, you know, they're expected to do well. But sometimes when you're expected to do well and you've got a lot of star players, you have a little bit of a different atmosphere and a little bit of different things that you would have to do. Maybe Phil Jackson, Chicago or Los Angeles in the NBA, similar type of thing where you have to manage a group of really high performers. Now, again, not to draw parallels with the players, but you have your own set of challenges where the expectations are always high.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. When you're expected to win, it's more difficult sometimes to win than when you're not expected. There's nothing worse than sometimes having that bullseye on your back. So you have to give a lot of credit to coaches. And, you know, I can remember, in Hockey East, when Jerry York was named Coach of the Year, maybe I'm going to go back 4 years ago, and I had written a column the week before the banquet and, you know, didn't even mention Jerry York as somebody that should have been a coach of the year. And Mike Cavanaugh, who is now at UConn, was his assistant at the time. And he came up to me, he's like, hey, did you maybe leave somebody off that coach of the year list? And I sat there and I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, maybe left somebody off at Providence. Maybe left somebody off at wherever I was leaving coaches off. He's like, do you ever think of Jerry York? And of course he knew at that point that Jerry had won coach of the year. And was just really trying to give me the business. And, you can easily forget some of these coaches that the expectations every year is to win. So you make a really good point, because the truth is that it is sometimes more difficult to win when you're supposed to, because everybody wants to beat you.
Well, Jim, it's time for us to take a break. In fact, we're going to bring in a coach who's probably under consideration for that award in his own conference, and that's Canisius head coach Dave Smith. He'll join us in just a few moments when we return here on USCHO Live.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
Get ready, Boston. The Frozen Four returns to TD Garden. Be there and experience it live. The top four teams in the country will compete for the title, but only one will make history.
Wow! Backhand save!
Become a national champion.
He buries it!
The 2015 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 and reserve your seats today.
This is USCHO Live.
Welcome back to USCHO Live. I'm Ed Trefsker alongside Jim Connolly.
And we're joined now by a coach who has made some nice waves up in Buffalo, New York, after a very successful run as an assistant at Mercyhurst, and that's Dave Smith, the head coach of Canisius College. And Dave, you actually got to play your old boss and your old team last weekend and handed them a couple of losses at Mercyhurst. Do those games get a little bit more competitive because you have a great history with Rick Gotkin?
Well, you know, Ed and Jim, thanks for having me on here. And you know, the friendship with Rick Gotkin is special for me. I learned so much with him. And, you know, I cheer for Rick when we're not playing them, and it's a great rivalry that him and I have between each other, and we talk about each other's teams, and I continue to learn from Rick, who's, you know, done a wonderful job at Mercyhurst for a long, long time.
Well, and that series sweep did a lot for your team, and your Canisius team now sits alone in second place, one weekend to go in the regular season, a point ahead of Bentley, 3 points ahead of Mercyhurst, for the really knowing that you're going to be getting a first round bye right now. Talk a little bit about what the second half has been like for your team, because it seems that you've played some very good hockey, and you're as coaches always try to say, they want to be playing their best hockey at tournament time. Your team has to be pretty close to that in your mind right now.
Yeah, we have. We've played very well, and I know that what Atlantic hockey does is it makes you play every weekend. And you know, right now we came back from Christmas and we went up to Maine, and we tried hard, we played okay, and Maine beat us. We felt like Maine beat us and took it to us, and we added a little bit of adjustments to our game that we had been working on over Christmas. We had a long layoff and really just getting our D a lot more involved in our play. Then we went to Maine and saw it firsthand from the other team. Maine's defensemen were very active, very involved, and to get our defensemen involved, it maybe took a little bit of a wake-up call. And after the new year, after that Maine series, we played very, very well. There's, you know, a couple freshmen got in the lineup, one back from injury, one just got more ready to play, that really began to help us on the back end. And It's a battle every night. I mean, Atlantic hockey is a challenge, and we've been in the position where we're battling for that, you know, 3 through 6 spot, 7 spot, and right now we're in a good position. We like where we are, and we're excited to, you know, wrap up the season and get going with the playoffs.
Dave, one thing I look at when I look at the results for your team is in the second half when you've had success, really low goals against. You're talking 0, 1, or 2 goals in most of the games in the second half of the season. Talk about the back end of your team, and I guess it kind of ends with the goaltenders, and that's Keegan Asmundson and Riley Turner.
Well, I think if I start with the goaltenders, it took a little while for Keegan, who has been the backup to our superstar Tony Capobianco, took Keegan a little bit to, I think, get comfortable in that senior role. And early in the year, and he would be the first to tell you, he didn't play his best hockey, but he's such a great athlete and he's such a good competitor that really we could see him getting better. We could see him just using his 6'5", 225-pound frame to his advantage. When he wasn't on, Riley Turner, the freshman, who's not as big, not many people are as big as Keegan, but he's not as big, but he really, really competes. He raised the competitive bar of Keegan and the entire team just by coming in and playing hard. So those guys have set the table and set the tone for our team. And once they settled into not necessarily a routine or a rotation, but they settled into both pushing each other as hard as they can, our team really took off. And, you know, the goals against is, I think it was Bill Belichick said something about, you know, quarterbacks are the beneficiary of the good players around them. Well, I think goaltenders are the same thing. And our philosophy here is pretty simple. It's everybody try to play hard defensively and try to score goals. And if we do those things, good things can happen. It's not rocket science for us. And we've been fortunate to have good depth right now, and we're being carried by 10 seniors as well. That makes it a lot easier as a coach.
We're talking with Dave Smith, the head coach at Canisius College. And Dave, I look at the front end of your team, and there's two players who really stand out to me. And Ralph Kademi, one of the best scorers and goal scorers in the nation, 21 goals and 36 points at this point. And then another name that people might have some familiarity with, this is Shane Conacher, but his brother did some pretty special things at your school. And as Ed just pointed out to me, Shane is actually on better pace than his brother was offensively. Can you talk about what those two players have meant for this season?
Yeah, they've been wonderful. They feed off of each other, and there's so many, you know, interesting storylines with them. Since we put them together last year, the chemistry really is through the roof. And the last time we had chemistry, they just quite liked that, because you have chemistry off and on and here and there. But it was Shane's brother, Corey. Corey had really a 4-year chemistry with another super player we had, Vince Scarsella, and it was fun to watch them motivate each other and bicker back and forth like brothers and fight and scratch and claw. But Ralph and Shane are really the engine behind our team, the fuel that they bring energy, they bring high skill, they bring passion to the little things, to the little plays and the face-off plays, whatever it is. Those two, they're always in each other's ear. They sit and watch video together, and you know, they've had a special year. If the season ended today, you could say that it's one of the best, you know, best lines, those two, the combo that we've had at Canisius in my time here. And it's truly been a joy for me to watch those two. And I say perform not only on the ice, but off the ice.
We're speaking with Canisius head coach Dave Smith. Dave, one of the things that has been really exciting for your program this year is moving into Harbor Center. And I have to say, I was really blown away by the place. One of the real jewels in Atlantic hockey as the whole league is starting to improve facilities. But here's actually a question that came in from a Canisius fan who wrote in. And the first question is, how has the new Harbor Center changed your recruiting at Canisius?
Well, it's a question that anybody that gets a $225 million facility, you know, in their backyard, I mean, I think that's a question that anybody would love to answer, but it's not as easy as that, because our program really has continued to grow and continued to, I guess, gained national notoriety. We went to the NCAA tournament in 2013. We had Corey Conacher playing in the NHL, and then we get the new building. And quite honestly, I thought it would happen the other way around. I thought we would get into a building and maybe we'd find some success and then get an NHL player. But those things together are really what has jump-started our recruiting, not necessarily into a different type of person, but the interest level and the awareness about what is going on in Buffalo. And the Harbor Center, their goal is to have every elite hockey player come through the Harbor Center, and they make it a special place. And on a daily basis, there's NHL players, NHL teams, GMs, coaches that want to come through the locker room, that want to come through our facility, the training center, and see it. So the buzz around the hockey world has definitely made a big, big difference in the awareness of our hockey program, the awareness and the first-class nature of Atlantic hockey and what we're trying to do. And it's become a special place, and we're fortunate that, you know, the Pagulas are in Buffalo, and that the Buffalo Sabres are committed, and that the Harbor Center has unbelievable people in and around it every day.
You mentioned the training center. When I was there in November, John Maddock from the athletic department gave a couple of us a tour through that training area that you get to use along with the Sabres. Can you tell us a little bit about the advantages of that and how much that's a help for your program?
Well, it's almost 4,000 square feet of the best training equipment there is. And our guys didn't quite get the grasp of it. They thought, oh, a new place to work out when we first got in there. And they stopped us, and our strength and conditioning coaches stopped our guys and said, listen, don't walk through these doors if you're just going to get a lift in or you're just going to get a workout in. You're here to train. We've got the best equipment. We've got the best facility. And you're here to train and become a better hockey player. And it's not just a better fitness level, it's a better hockey player. So whether it's rapid shot, which is, you know, a place we can shoot pucks all day long, whether it's the sprint track that's indoors or all of the great equipment just down the hall from our state-of-the-art locker room, all of the amenities that you need to be an elite hockey player are right there at our disposal. And again, it doesn't happen. I mean, there's lots of gyms, there's lots of places to work out, but the people at the Harbor Center and the Impact Training Center that we use, they're the ones that make the difference because they are at the top of their game, and that's what the players want. The players want an elite environment. They want to know that they're doing everything they can to reach the next level of pro hockey after college, and it's really changed not the culture of how we play and how we practice, but the culture of expectations about what it takes to be a pro because we now have unbelievable facilities.
Dave, one last thing I wanted to follow up on the facility. One of the things that's been difficult for Atlantic hockey is getting home out of conference dates, and that has hurt the league overall in areas like pairwise rankings and postseason possibilities. And this is another listener question. You started out with a couple of games against Ohio State to open the new facility, and they'd like to know, does the new facility allow you to draw some new competition in for out-of-conference play?
Yeah, it really does. I mean, we've got an agreement with Ohio State that we're partway through where they, you know, we're in our building this year. Western Michigan was in our building this year. Next year we've got, you know, Penn State and Bowling Green coming in. And in the future, you know, we've really tried to grow the brand in New York State. And we have home and homes with almost every New York State school stretched out between now and 2019. You know, it's a challenge in recruiting. I can't really tell you the secret to the pairwise other than win all your games and you know, play them on the road and play them at home and win them. So the pairwise to me is not relevant. I want our fans to see these top teams come through and to see the coaches like Andy Murray, you know, who have been in the National Hockey League come through. And our philosophy on scheduling is let's go east, let's go west, let's play the big boys, let's play everybody that we can, and let's see if they'll come back to our building. And that's been a philosophy that has worked for our hockey program and our athletic department, And now that we do have the facility, I think it's just an easier sell because there is a lot of people coming through the city of Buffalo to experience top hockey players, whether it be, you know, at the festival coming into the city in the summer times with USA Hockey or the World's Under 18 World Championships that were here on the women's side, to the NHL Combine coming to the Harbor Center. All of those things make a difference. Just the awareness that, hey, we do it right, we do it first class, and everybody is on board between the city of Buffalo, the Buffalo Sabres, and definitely the Harbor Center leading the way. So all of those things create a synergy that says, yeah, let's go there. It's first class. We can play games. And it's also coincided with our team, you know, having some success and playing well. So they know that it's not an easy game, and it's not a gimme game either way. It's, you know, in Atlantic Hockey, I believe if we can get more home games in Atlantic Hockey, we will go up in the pairwise.
We're talking to Dave Smith from Canisius, and your team is going to head out to Air Force for two this weekend, close the regular season, and then have a bye through the first round of the Atlantic Hockey Tournament. Dave, maybe you kind of started to answer it right there with that last question, but I was up in Buffalo for the World Juniors a few years ago, and we've been there for Frozen Fours, and I've been through that area. There is a hockey culture there, and they love their hockey. How have you marketed toward that population? Because you do have more than just one team. There are the Sabres, Niagara's down the road, you're there, RIT is not too far away. There's a lot of programs in a general area that need to kind of market to the masses. How has your school kind of approached finding the fan and grabbing that fan?
Well, I think the history is important here, Jim, in that we don't have 100 years of hockey at Canisius and Niagara. But we plant seeds now that we try to grow with kids. You know, if you grow up in New England, they start with two choices, BU or BC. And we want the Western New York kids to do the same thing. You're either going to Niagara or Canisius. And that's where the marketing starts. It's on the grassroots level, you know, with the players, recognizing that this is where the top guys go. And once we do that, now we can band together with our efforts. You know, again, the Harbor Center has a crew. And when I say the Harbor Center, it's not just a building. I say Harbor Center meaning the people, that they want butts in the seats. They want people to experience that facility with a 20-story hotel on top of a parking ramp with the two rinks on the sixth floor. It's a unique building. So that by itself isn't enough to draw. Elite hockey isn't enough to draw. The hockey community isn't by itself enough to draw. But all of those things together, going after all of the tournament teams that come in, going after the West New York hockey market, partnering with the Sabres to get our brand out there, all of those things come together. And we've seen, I don't want to say our attendance has doubled, but in a 2,000-seat arena, we're up around 1,400-1,500 now when we were not even close to that in the past. And it's become a night out in Western New York community. And as, I think, awareness grows around the country, you'll see our attendance continue to grow.
Well, we're going to wrap up things with Dave Smith, Canisius head coach. You've got a trip this weekend out to Air Force, always a tough place to play. You have things sort of settled for your team. Air Force is going to be scrapping to see if they can get the last first round bye. And if I'm correct in my memory on this, Air Force has never had to go on the road until Rochester for Atlantic Hockey playoffs. So there's a lot on the line there. What do you see for this weekend, and maybe what are some of the particular challenges about going out to Air Force?
Well, if I start with the challenges, I mean, they're a well-coached team. They've got a history of success, and they're a proud team that maybe isn't in the spot in the standings that they would like to be or envision themselves. But it's a testament to the teams in our league, how challenging it is. I can tell you that we're going to be boarding a plane Thursday morning at 4 a.m. Or 6 a.m., getting up at 4, and it's a long day out there. We fly into Denver, you bus down to Colorado Springs, you grab a bite to eat, and you get on the ice for practice, and the two-hour time change feels like it's about 10 hours different. It's a long, long day, and then when you wake up the next morning at 6 o'clock, ready for your Eastern Standard Time 8 o'clock class for the guys, you still got some time to sleep. So it just messes up your schedule. The altitude is tough. But all of those things are a little bit distractions. The hardest part about going out there is that Air Force is a good team. Air Force plays hard. They always play hard. They play they defend home ice very, very well. They're tough to play against. And when you couple all of those things together, it makes for a challenging road trip, and one that we've had some success on. But, you know, we're going out there to try and lock up second spot, and there's a lot on the line for us, as there is on a lot on the line for them. So I anticipate a great weekend.
Canisius and Air Force, two games out in Colorado Springs this weekend. David Smith, the head coach of Canisius, wish you the best of luck as the season comes to a close here. It feels like the season has flown by, but we look forward to hopefully seeing you around in the postseason, and best of luck.
Thanks so much, guys. I know that Atlantic Hockey will send a champion that will be prepared for the NCAA tournament, and it's awful challenging to get through the year, and I appreciate you guys having me on and get a chance to talk about our team and our league.
That's Dave Smith, head coach at Canisius, and we'll be back with John Powers from the Boston Globe when USCHO Live continues.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
College hockey offers fast-paced action with the unmatched atmosphere of a college campus. Experience the passion and excitement as schools from across the country compete for the NCAA Division I national title. College hockey produces exemplary young men, including one-third of all NHL players, like Ryan Miller, Matt Molson, and Brian Gianta. Whether you're a fan of the game or a prospective player, nothing compares to the college hockey experience. Play it smart. Play college hockey. Visit collegehockeyinc.com.
Get ready, Boston. The Frozen Four returns to TD Garden. Be there and experience it live. The top four teams in the country will compete for the title, but only one will make history.
Wow! Backhand save!
Become a national champion.
He buries it!
The 2015 NCAA Men's Frozen Four, April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/frozen4 and reserve your seats today.
This is USCHO Live.
And we do thank the NCAA Frozen Four for their support of USCHO Live down the stretch. And as long as we're talking about Boston, Jim, why don't we bring in our next guest?
And you may have seen him in many Sunday mornings filling in on the sports reporters on ESPN. He's been a great Olympic columnist for the Boston Globe, and he loves college hockey probably as much as any sports. And that's John Powers from the Boston Globe. John, welcome to a chilly evening in Boston, but a hot night of hockey last night at the Garden, it sure was.
It was. It was one of the better finals I've seen. As a matter of fact, we were almost a few seconds away from what we've been calling the Year of the Hound, Northeastern, not since the Reagan presidency was so close. It was just a stunning final. I can't remember the last time that BU was up two goals with, you know, 9 minutes to go in a final and had to go to overtime.
In that game, we'll start there, Northeastern against Boston University. And like you said, a fantastic hockey game, a great comeback by Northeastern. I guess a lot of people might be wondering today, why did Northeastern get behind in that game? Because they played such a strong first period. But that maybe is what Boston University has proven all year that they can do. At times of the game, they can take control of the game, and they certainly did that last night to grab that lead.
They did. And I think one thing also, which is unusual this year, but usually BU and Northeastern have played before the Beanpot. This year they had not. So they were a bit of an unknown quantity. BU had played Harvard. They had played BC. And I think BU knew that Northeastern, this is not the same Northeastern team that was, you know, 0 for their first nine. This is a Northeastern team on fire, and I wouldn't want to play them down the stretch. So I think it was pretty clear to them, especially after Northeastern tied that very quickly after BU took the lead, that they needed to get up on top and stay on top, not wait till the third period, which is what BU has been able to do.
The game delayed 2 weeks because of a rash of snowstorms here in Boston. That didn't take away from the atmosphere, I thought, and I thought that those two teams, in terms of their fan support and in terms of what they brought in intensity, I was kind of worried that the intensity of a Beanpot final would be absent from that building. That was hardly the case last night.
No, it really was. As a matter of fact, what was interesting, and we were talking about this earlier, the consolation game between BC and Harvard was really, really intense, and that's what they said. In earlier days, when that game didn't mean anything, you would have seen people bring up JVs, use your backup tender, and just Jerry York said, when's the next game? When can we get out of here? But now this game counts for the pairwise. It was a huge game for Harvard. And it's still, you know, reasonably, BC probably is going to make the NCAAs, but they wanted to win that game. If you saw the way their guys came over the dasher after they won, in overtime, it was as though they had won the tournament.
Yeah, and that was something you wrote. We're talking with John Powers from the Boston Globe, and I read your piece today kind of talking about that game. Talk about Harvard, and I know as a Harvard alum, you kind of keep a side eye on the Crimson, even though you really college hockey isn't your main beat. But what do you think has maybe happened to that team? I know they've had some injury woes. I know that this is a team that knew how good they were at some point in that first half of the season. Is it a possibility that maybe this team has gotten to a point where they're in the position, they're so close, but now they're almost too nervous to win?
Well, what's interesting about Harvard is they had this amazing start. I mean, people are, you know, can't remember now, but they were number one in the pairwise back. I would argue if you had played the Beanpot at Christmas time, Harvard wins it. I mean, you look at what they had done. They beat BC, admittedly, you know, without BC's top goalie, without Demko at BC. They beat BU at BU and held Jack Eichel, arguably the best player in the country, off the board. They won up at UMass Lowell, and then they began getting injuries. 1-1-1-1-1, and then suddenly that was not the same team. And they're still starting to get guys back in, but they have lost their top defenseman. Still trying to get back what they had earlier. Not a bad team. It would not surprise me that they get home ice in the ECAC, but clearly they have to make a run now. They've got to at least make the ECAC semis, I would think, and they may have to win the whole tournament.
Well, we look at the ECAC standings. Harvard tied for fourth place right now, only 1 weekend left to play. It's kind of a tight race. Do you think that they maybe need that weekend off, John, to know that they get a home quarterfinal series and know that they can maybe have a few days off of that banging and roughing up of a game series to maybe get some of these bodies back healthy?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think what is most important is that they get time to just get guys healthy, get an extra week of practice. This is a pretty good home team. They would not, I would not want to be Harvard having to go and play play a first round, even against a Union or Brown or someone like that. You don't necessarily want to have to play a couple games and then go up and play on the road against a fresh St. Lawrence, a French Yale. They've had a lot of trouble. I mean, they were crushed by St. Lawrence this year twice. They were crushed by Yale. This is not a team that wants to meet these teams before the semifinals. And plus, they need to know. if they can't beat a Quinnipiac team at home that really has no reason to really play hard now, they don't really belong in the NCAAs.
And that game will be this weekend. Harvard will host Quinnipiac and Princeton this weekend in a last place Princeton team. And that's one of those games I guess you have to look at as a real, real must win. John, stepping a little bit off of the current standings and leagues, the Boston going to play host to this year's NCAA Frozen Four. And you've covered a number of these events. This is an event that seems fit for Boston because of their true hockey legacy. It's been a while since it's been here, though. What do you think fans are in for with this year's Frozen Four?
Well, I think one thing here is that this has become an event now where the East is a legitimate chance year in, year out to be able to win this thing. You go back to the 50s and 60s, when it was the top two from the WCHA and the top two from the ECAC, the East usually got crushed. I mean, those games were not close. And if you look at what has happened over the last few years, you know, having a Yale win it, having a Union win it, they can now skate. Not just the ECAC, I mean, BCBU. I would argue more years than not, the Eastern team is probably going to be favored. A lot of it may be, I don't think that the East has pro-style players to the degree that they do out west. I think they tend to be faster, a little bit quicker on the puck. And we saw earlier NCAAs where speed just flew right by people. And this is a speed that we are used to seeing in the East, but I don't think that the Western teams in Minnesota, Wisconsin, North Dakota see that speed day in, day out.
John, one last question before we let you go. You've seen a lot of college hockey, and now you've seen a guy who has a lot of hype behind him and a lot of potential belief in NHL, Jack Eichel, and Boston University. You've watched him a couple of Mondays and back and back and back.
A few weeks, but watching Jack Eichel, Boston University,
what are your thoughts on player?
You know what? I think you are breaking up on the phone line. I wasn't able to get that question.
I was trying to ask what your thoughts were on Jack Eichel in terms of what he is for potential NHL talent.
Oh, are you talking about Eichel, I'm sorry?
Yes.
Yeah, I think Jim was asking your thoughts on Jack Eichel and his potential as an NHL talent.
Yeah, I think, what is interesting about Jack, he does the little things that NHL people see. For example, it was his winning faceoff in overtime, is rushing down to basically set up the penalty that set up the goal. But what I haven't seen so far in the games that I've watched Jack is him taking over a game by sheer force of will, where he goes end-to-end and just scores the winning goal. I haven't seen that yet. I do think he certainly has the talent. Jack Parker, who's a guy who he recruited Jack back when he was a freshman in high school, basically. I mean, back then, said he looks like he's skating slow. He's not skating slow. He's just very, very efficient. Great vision, plays good defense, knows when to use energy, big, strong kid, good shot. It may well be that these guys aren't up to his level. I mean, I saw him make passes, the last couple of games that maybe his teammates aren't ready for, don't know how to convert. I think at the NHL level, he'll be able to do that. And I kind of saw this in high school with the Brian Lawtons and the Bobby Carpenters, just too good for the level that they were at. The thing about Jack Eichel, he's always played up. He's always been able to play with guys 4, 5, 6 years older and play well. It may well be you will see him better in the NHL than you are in fact seeing him now, but there's no doubt he has the tools. And what I was hearing earlier is, at first I was hearing one and done, then I was hearing, well, he may stay around another year. Now I'm hearing again, one and done.
That's a really interesting take, John, and I really agree with you. Sometimes not every player has the teammates around them to show exactly how good they are. Maybe we saw that at World Juniors as well. John Powers, we always enjoy having you on the show. Your insight on college hockey, a lot of fun. Thanks for your time, and hopefully we will see you down the road at some of these great tournaments that are still to come.
Thanks, guys. We will see you in the Garden.
We certainly will.
All right, that's John Powers from the Boston Globe. We'll be back in a few moments to wrap up this week's edition of USCHO Live.
USCHO Live is brought to you by the USCHO Fan Shop at shop.uscho.com. For college hockey and college sports fan gear, visit shop.uscho.com. USCHO Live from U.S. College Hockey Online at uscho.com.
The Frozen Four returns to Boston.
He buries it!
Be there and experience it live.
Go!
April 9th and 11th at TD Garden in Boston. Tickets on sale now. Visit ncaa.com/Frozen Four and reserve your seats today.
This is USCHO Live.
Welcome back to USCHO Live. Don't get left out in the cold this spring. Be there. The best of the best will compete for the title of national champion. Experience the NCAA Men's Frozen Four. Regional action drops the puck March 27th through 29 and continues April 9th and 11th at the Frozen Four in Boston. Experience it live as determination will make history. Visit ncaa.com/Frozen Four to make a date with champions. Jim, I'm looking forward to the Frozen Four. Not only for the hockey, but it's also for those of us who cover college hockey, sort of a family reunion every year.
Yeah, it really is. And that's one of the best parts about college hockey, that it really is a pretty insular group. You know, everybody knows everybody in this world of field. So, and I don't just mean that from the media. There are some fans that I have seen going to this event, and I had the good fortune of running into a couple of guys I hadn't seen in almost 15 years at a Frozen Four last year, and got to hang out with them on Friday and Friday night at the Frozen Four. And I love that sort of stuff. And that's really what makes hockey special and makes me, you know, no matter what my life has taken, I've always ended up back in college hockey in some way, shape, or form. So that's always fun.
Well, this weekend, a few teams will continue to jockey for position. We talked about what's going on in Atlantic hockey. In the WCHA, the McNaughton Cup could be decided, and number 2 Minnesota hosting number 3 Michigan Tech. Right now, the Mavericks just a 1-point lead, 4 games remaining, and if they can sweep this weekend, they clinch the title and clinch that McNaughton Cup.
Yeah, but it's going to be a little bit of a tough trail to get to that point, because that is about as difficult a series as you can imagine for Minnesota State. The fact that they're home does help a lot, but Michigan Tech has played some great consistent hockey, just like Minnesota State has. This really, you think as commissioners, I think, of leagues, you try to do your best to schedule down the stretch some of the best series, and you know, we're going to see it some of the series in Hockey East this weekend. It seems to have kind of fallen out that way as well. But when you can talk about putting the number 3 team in the country traveling to the number 2 team in the country in the penultimate weekend of a season, that's pretty good scheduling. I don't think any commissioner could even predict that you were going to be able to do that. So that will be one to watch. Don't believe that there's any national TV behind it. It's going to be on TV in Mankato. But if you can find a feed for that game somewhere on the internet, do it. That should be a lot of fun to watch that series.
Well, while we're talking about working things out, it seems to me that after maybe a down year to begin the league, the NCHC is living up to what the founders and the members of that league expected. This weekend, number 7 Denver hosting number 5 Miami. Denver tied for third place, Miami in second place. And then number 6 Minnesota Duluth, which is in fifth place, hosting number 8 Omaha, also tied for third. Positions in the standings, pairwise, top 10 teams. What a great weekend for the NCHC.
Yeah, I mean, let's look at that league realistically. By the end of the season, the odds on the fact that you will have 5 20-win teams in the NCHC is very legitimate. You know, and then you look at the teams in 6, 7, and 8, Colorado College on a down year. But I think that Western Michigan can go in and beat any team on any given night. You know, they were 7-3 outside of their conference. They've actually struggled within the conference. St. Cloud State is a tough team as well. So you talk about that top five in that league, and every one of them deserve an NCAA tournament bid in my mind right now. That I believe plays out, whether it will at the end of the season, who knows. But all of those teams, I think Nebraska-Omaha has the least number of wins of them, and that's 17. And they were a team that a couple of weeks ago I thought was probably going to be a number one seed in the NCAA tournament. They still could get there. That's how good they are. That league is incredible, and they have – it took them a year and a half really to get there, but they are now certainly living up to what a lot of people thought they would be. Now the one question that surfaces is, will one of those teams maybe be sacrificed when it comes to the NCAA field, a really good team that doesn't make it because – they kind of beat each other up within league play. That's something everybody has talked about, who should be the teams on the outside. You know, four teams have to get into the NCAA tournament, you think. But if that fifth team gets left out, then you're kind of sit there and saying, wow, a 21 team maybe gets left out of the NCAA tournament. Very realistic when you think about the NCHC this year.
You mentioned St. Cloud State, the Huskies, 3 wins in a row, and they do travel to number one North Dakota. The pair of games will be on CBS Sports Television, or not the pair of games, just the Friday night game. A pair of games as we turn to Hockey East, not two ranked teams, but a tough weekend. Certainly anytime you travel to South Bend, Indiana, as Boston College in for a pair at Notre Dame, NBC Sports Network will have both of those games nationally.
Oh, and Notre Dame is playing some great hockey. I got to see them play out at Boston University last Saturday night. They are playing as strong as they were. It reminds me a lot of how they closed out last season. If anybody doesn't remember, BC was seemingly unbeatable, and Notre Dame beat them on the last day of the regular season, a Saturday afternoon game at Boston College. Then Notre Dame survived a single-game play-in to get into the quarterfinals. And then after doing that, went into Boston College, the number one seed and by far the hottest team in the country toward the end of the season, and beat them in a 2 out of 3 series. I think that Notre Dame's in a very different position. They're trying to fight for home ice this weekend. They could get it. They are playing very well right now. Their power play, which I thought was really struggling earlier in the season, they've started clicking. They're getting those contributions. And Cal Peterson, a freshman in net, is just, he's lights out. He had a fantastic third period against Boston University last Saturday night. I think he had 11 grade A saves in the period. So that's when you have a goaltender that's playing that well and a team that's starting to score in front of them, they're dangerous. And Boston College is in for a very, very difficult test this weekend out in South Bend.
Also in Hockey East, a couple of ranked teams, UMass Lowell hosting Vermont for a pair of games. That should be good to see if both teams can kind of get a little momentum out of this.
Yeah, and critical for both teams. You know, the odds on are that only one of those teams will come out of this weekend with a first-round bye in the playoffs. Lowell has the position right now. Vermont, with a sweep or even 3 points, I believe, can take over that position. So it means a lot. And that's the whole thing of these leagues, the three Eastern leagues, ECAC, Atlantic Hockey, and Hockey East, is you have a double-layered tournament where you have a first-round that's a best-of-3 between the bottom, whether it's 6 or 8 teams, and then a quarterfinal series. That is what most people know better in college hockey. The ability to avoid that first round and then get a home series in the quarterfinals is really what you play for all season. Yes, everybody would like to win a regular season title. That's only one team. It's those four teams, or in Atlantic Hockey's case, those 5 teams. Just trying to get that bye is so critical. So for Lowell and Vermont, that will be what is on the table this week. Add in the pairwise implication, add in the momentum going to the playoffs. There really is. This is a pretty big series for both of those teams.
We also, you mentioned Atlantic Hockey, 3rd, 4th, and 5th, kind of up for grabs there. Canisius out at Air Force, the Falcons are trying to at least get into 5th place, which is as high as they can go. They could also end up in 6th or 7th, so they really need those wins. RIT can finish anywhere from 3rd to 7th. They have Mercyhurst in for a pair. Mercyhurst itself can finish anywhere from second place to sixth place in the league with two games left in the regular season. Just a crazy finish in that conference.
Yeah, and Mercyhurst was a pretty red-hot team, and they, you know, they stumbled last weekend against Canisius in that series. So they really want to get their momentum headed back in the right direction, you know, because they had put together four wins. But when you really look at it, besides that, the last nine games, they all the remaining games were losses. So they've only they had a nice stretch of four wins, but other than that, they've really struggled since late January. So Mercyhurst needs some momentum if they're going to go into the tournament. They certainly. I know Rick Gocken well enough. That was one thing he always loved, was trying to get that home ice in the quarterfinals, and that's the battle his team faces this weekend.
Well, they have had some juggling at goaltender. Their top senior, Jimmy Sargent, lost for the rest of the season, so it'll be between a freshman and a sophomore between the pipes for Mercyhurst the rest of the way out. WCHA, again, we mentioned what's going on there. Just a great weekend of hockey, as it's either the last or next to last weekend in the regular season for most of those. And you know what, Jim? It looks like we have somebody who's called in here. Let's see if we can sneak them in here right at the end before we go off. How's that?
Sounds good.
Okay, caller, you snuck in here on the end of the show. What can we do for you tonight? Hello, caller, are you
Hello?
There? Yeah. What's your name and where are you from?
My name is Dave. I'm from Grand Forks.
Go ahead, Dave. What's your question?
Well, the question I have is, are the rankings stacked in favor of the NCHC, and are some of the teams overrated, and do they need to be split up in the playoffs, and should Minnesota go to Fargo in the regional? That's it.
Good questions there, Dave. I think you know, the pairwise, when you look at the rankings, the pairwise really plays out to how the team did against you know, really against their schedule. And the NCHC has proven that their out of conference schedule very strong, and their performance in the out of conference schedule very strong. So the fact that there's a lot of teams from that conference, and really from the West, when you throw the WCHA in as well on top, doesn't surprise me. In terms of where teams should go in the regional, I think a lot of it plays out to where teams end up finishing in the pairwise. And if Minnesota is one of the top four teams in the pairwise, then yes, they do. They do really need to go to Grand Forks. It probably would help to go there no matter what in terms of attendance. But they can also send them, I think, to South Bend and really help the attendance there because
yeah.
I just think that the Gopher fans travel so well that.
Well, Jim,
I have no problem
I mean,
with
North Dakota.
Minnesota,
I mean,
with
if
Minnesota
North
going to Fargo, the issue is disrupting the rankings, the pairwise, which Minnesota would be 15, and to go to Fargo, they'd be 13.
Right.
That's not very accurate for pairwise.
This time around, Minnesota, in the most recent one, would be ranked 13th, and North Dakota number two. North Dakota is the host school for Fargo, would be there. The thing that would concern me is that the capacity in Fargo, that would be a really tough ticket. I mean, that would be a huge sellout to see the Gophers heading to take on Minnesota or take on North Dakota.
Well, you know what's going to happen. I don't think Jason Moy understands this. Is it doesn't matter who goes to Fargo, it's going to be sold out.
Correct.
You know, it doesn't matter if Minnesota goes there or not. I mean, the scalpers are going to make a lot more money, but it really is no point to have Minnesota go there.
Yeah,
which,
that could
you
be,
know,
that
I don't really, really care, but, you know, if I were a Gopher fan, I'd rather go to Northeast or somewhere.
Yeah, well, Dave, thanks for your call. We appreciate your time. I think that the one thing that we look at is maybe this is a time where you maybe even try to send them to the weakest region in terms of ticket sales, and that right now it seems would be the South Bend Regional, and maybe that would make Minnesota fit there. It's all stuff that plays out based on really – I you know, when you hear Jason talk about in bracketology every week, avoiding that interconference matchup, and then supporting the gate after that. So I think that those are the things that really become paramount to the NCAA tournament committee's objectives when they place teams in regions. But there's no doubt the Fargo regional's got to sell out with North Dakota there. That is a given. From there, what can you do to help the gate elsewhere?
Yep, correct. Well, I agree with you, Jim, and maybe we can get Jason Moy on before the end of the season to talk a little bit of bracketology.
We'll do our best to bring him from Asia, which is sometimes
well. No,
a time
I think he's stateside
but...
these days, actually. But anyhow, we'll see if we can line him up. But anyway, thanks for Dave's call from out in Fargo, and Jim. I guess that'll wrap things up. We went a little long tonight, but we got that leeway. So I guess we'll see you all next week for our first episode of March 2015 on USCHO Live. And we'll wrap it right there. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Ed.